Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. I'm Andy Rowan. Big Jim and Gertie are with me as usual. We'll be hearing from Rusty Erasmus and his dog Frank, who sent us a nice wee voice note over the weekend. Then we'll be looking back at all the weekend action as Leicester suffered their first defeat in the Premiership season and Bath got their first win. Then we'll be joined by Gloucester centre Billy 12 Trees after their Saracens win. And don't forget, make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, should we start with the voice note, lads? That must have been the highlight of your week.
Absolutely loved it. It was a welcomed boost for me personally, Andrew. I know that you've had your own interactions with him, but he mentioned my name. He mentioned the pod. He couldn't work out whether we were taking the piss or not. Were we? I don't know.
Who knows, mate? Who knows?
It could have been. Depends what day it was. But lovely little thumbnail as well. And for you, Goody, that's just a kind of a holding picture video of the flag. His digital creative nous, as well as being one of the best coaches in the world, and the fact that he sounded like he had 25 bottles of wine responsibly, made my week, I will be honest. So, Rassi, I would have liked to follow. He only follows one person. Have you seen who that is?
Well, I know, James. I know who it is. Because he sent me a couple of messages on Twitter over the weekend, just a couple of DMs.
So it's you?
No, it's not actually. It's Augustin Pichot. I think he wants Augustin Pichot to be head of World Rugby, doesn't he?
Is that what it is? I can't work out what it is. But anyway, he ain't following Bill Beaumont. That's all. Not that he should. I mean, we obviously had Bill and Augustin on the podcast. Absolutely loved it. It was felt like a political debate. But he's following, like you said, Augustin Pichot, hashtag number 9 or whatever it is, whatever his profile handle is. I want him to follow me. Come on, Rassi. Come on.
I did ask him privately. I said, are you looking forward to your appearance on the pod? When are you coming on? And I think he's in some sort of, I don't know, it's kind of weird. He's in some sort of media lockdown, yet he's still posting the best things on social media. He's just going out on his own, on a limb, isn't he? Just posting him and his dog and having fun and all that stuff. Yet, actual serious content, not that our podcast is too serious, but a serious interview within the media sphere that we live in, he's blanketing everything at the minute and he's not doing it. But he has said he'll come on at some point. So that some point could be, if we're still going in 10 years and he hasn't come on, we'll get him on then.
Well, let's just have a listen to that clip now, shall we?
Hey, you guys and ladies, if there is there at the Rugby Pod, it's Russ here. Yeah, I just want to say thank you. I'm not sure if you're choking my chain or you're being serious, but it doesn't really matter. I just want to say thank you for having some fun with me, with my dog and so on. I know both of you. I played against you, but I mean, both of you have been really trying hard to get me onto your show, your podcast. And unfortunately, you know, I can't do it right now, but it's so nice. We call it Lekker in South Africa when people understand that a coach or a player or anybody is just full of mistakes like all of us. And yeah, we just happen to be, well, hopefully good in rugby. But, yeah, we're not perfect people and we're not saints and we don't do things not right. And it's nice to see that you guys bring some humor into it. I like the way you guys conduct yourself, the way you talk when you have your interviews. So, yeah, I'm not sure if you're pulling my chain or having a bit of fun with me. But like a guy like Joe Mahler, whoever, I just like, no, I think it's a world where we should supposed to be to say what we feel and without being afraid and nervous. And it's lucky to see you guys doing it. having some fun back with me. So, yeah, big shout out to you guys and appreciate it a lot. And yeah, I hope it's a great 2022 for you guys. Thank you. Razi, bye.
Wow, Jim. First and foremost, he's probably, as you said, had about 28 bottles of Van Rouge responsibly. But how good is that to get a message off probably the best coach in the world?
Who's pulling the chain? Does that mean what we would say in pulling your pisser? Is that what we'd say?
Yeah, pull your pisser, pull the chain, choking the head off one. But what I mean is, yeah, he knows. He listens to the pod, so he likes the fact that we say what we want and we're honest and we have a bit of fun with it. That's how he wants to be. But actually, there's a load of constraints on these top coaches, isn't there, of what they can and can't do. And he's having a bit of fun at the minute within his freedom of his ban. He's not in the mainstream media, but he's just doing it on social media, basically having a laugh and taking the piss. And it's actually fun to see, I think.
You could say that social media is mainstream media. It's as mainstream as you get, in my opinion. Yeah. But I know what you mean. Now, I didn't like the fact that he likened us to Joe Marler. I don't walk around wearing jumpsuits like I'm a Polish painter, but it's one of them where I'm looking at the way that he's interacting. I'm loving it. I know some stuff around Nick Berry, what he tweeted in the statement. There's another side to it. What we should do is like we did with Pichot and Bill Beaumont. Get them both on, right, and let the public decide. In this world that we live in, and I don't know, I flip-flop left and right, if you can say left and right these days, about which way and how we should live our lives. So depending on the day and how I feel, I'll probably go with the masses on should you be able to do what Rassi did as a referee, should you take that? I don't really know. It's a rhetorical question. But what I'm saying is 2022, let's get them on. And it's never going to happen. So Rassi, come on. And just let's put the wheels to right, mate. And I'm happy to drink 25 bottles of red responsibly.
I know last week was a very negative start to the podcast. I want to start off with something positive, and I want to direct it at you, Goody.
Oh, God.
You look like you've lost a lot of weight. What's been going on, mate? You're looking very trim around the gills.
Listen, are you choking my chain?
You're chucking my chain.
Well, it's been an interesting start to 2022 for me. As we spoke on the podcast last week, I want to get under 100 kilos, which would be nice. And I'm 2 kilos closer to being under 100. I lost 2 kilos last week. So thank you very much, Andy Rowe.
How do you lose 2 kilos in a week? Genuinely, I'm asking because you see these Weight Watcher programs, you don't see them as much anymore. You see that RG belt or whatever his name is, just add a belt, around a belt, that gastric knot or whatever, who's lost all that weight. How do you lose that much weight this quick?
Well, first and foremost, Weight Watchers is now only known as WW. I've seen an advert and I'm like, what? They're not even allowed to call it Weight Watchers anymore. And that's how woke the world is going.
Can you not say weight now?
Well, who knows? Anyway, 2 kilos have dropped off me this week. Started off Monday on the podcast, said I'm going to lose weight, said I'm going to get down to 100 kilos. Tuesday, I've started early. I've gone in for a spin class. And I'm thinking, I'm feeling good about myself. Got a bit of a sweat on. I say a bit of a sweat, dripping. And then Tuesday afternoon, I thought, I'm going to go and get my booster jab. So I've gone down to Boots, not far from where we live. Walked in, got the booster jab, walked out. Tell the sweats that on Tuesday night in bed. I've gone to bed, not feeling the best. I've woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I might as well have had 4 litres of water poured all over me. I'm cold, but I'm hot. Sweating like an absolute pig in bed. The missus has left. She's like, it's just horrific. She's gone to the other room. And that's how it's been for about 4 or 5 days. So I've been pretty rough for 4 or 5 days until I went up to the mighty Coventry Building Society Arena on Sunday, had a Guinness, and I feel a bit better now. But yeah, I haven't lost 2 kilos through hard work and graft in the gym. I've lost it after having the third jab, the booster jab. And I'm not saying I was ill because of that, but basically, I've lateral flow tested every day. Nothing's come up. Yeah, I'm sweating in bed every night. My bones have been hurting. My body's been hurting like you wouldn't believe. And I'm 2 kilos lighter from sweating at night time. So it's great. Lost a bit of appetite as well. Didn't eat as much last week. So it's a positive.
And who said that the booster wasn't beneficial? Who said that? Because from what I am seeing, this booster has arguably changed your life. So there's a positive on the positive here. See what I've done there? Because 2022 is the year of positivity. But Andrew, we did miss you because I know you were feeling a bit ropey last week. And I was at the Wolfpack Bar doing some filming, trying to do a new show. You talk about cowboy productions. So we're doing a new show called The Sesh. We don't know what it means. I mean, sesh could be anything from smoking weed to going on a sesh or doing a training session. So we're trying to work out what it is. Camera guy turns up. He's only brought one camera. Who do we call? Andy Rose up the road. Next thing, Andy Rose rocked up with 3 lights. He's brought the microphone. We're doing this show with Wolfpack. Andy Rowe, segues straight into the Andy Rowe show. It's not about us.
You got a podcast, Andy Rowe?
Did I mention that?
Yeah.
No one fucking listens to it, so let's carry on. Let's just fucking gloss over that.
But yeah, so I was at the Wolfpack Bar last week, out the house, trying to be productive, trying to be more positive, filming with my good mate Alistair and the Wolfpack lads, turned into Cowboy Productions, which, Andrew, as you know, is what I and what we do. So I don't know whether I'm just dangling the carrot or trying to get people to tune in, because there's nothing to even tune in for. I'm just trying to show that I've been productive in the start of the new year.
Well, the way I look at that is you were just glad to get out of the house and get away from the missus and the kids for a night out in London. And you can tell I was ill because you put the invite out there and said, get down to the Wolfpack Bar. We'll have 10 pints of Guinness responsibly. And I had to turn it down. I was absolutely slippered from not being slippered.
So Andy Rowe, what we're trying to do is I'm trying to give you some raps for saving the day, basically, so that I could go home and tell Rebecca and the kids that your dad has been productive and he's not gone down there and drank 10 pints of Wolfpack.
Well, the guys in the back room have been productive as well, because we have some big news before we get into the weekend's action. Guinness Six Nations is coming up. It's only a few weeks away, and we have our biggest ever Rugby Pod live tour lined up, and we're coming to a couple of new places as well, aren't we, guys?
Oh, yes, we are. There's one big name on the list. There is one big location that I can't wait for.
Hit me with yours.
Well, it's that moment to meet your nemesis, meet the eyes were locked across a nightclub. There was love in the air. Tiddy Von Tramp and Jim Hammond. We're going to Belfast, boys.
You see how I didn't know which place that was. That could have been a number of the locations that we're going to. But you're right, Belfast is one. There's been huge appetite. If that place don't sell out in 5 minutes, then I might not go, because the 10 messages I've had of people wanting to come to the Belfast show basically shows me that it's going to be sold out. Liverpool is a bit of a weird one. They love their ruggers up there. Is that the Wirral or not? Is that not Liverpool?
That area, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
And Manchester and London and obviously Edinburgh as well, hashtag always. So.
And Dublin. Mate, how good is it going to be to get back to Dublin? Dublin, I reckon, is my favourite place, right? So staying at the Dean Hotel, opposite where we do the event at the D2. But also, there's Copperface Jack's literally two doors away. Like, it's just going to be a quiet one. I'm just tell the missus and the kids, it's going to be a quiet one. I've got to go away for 2 days, though, for that event. So, mate, I can't wait.
The last time we were in Dublin, me and Goody got on a rickshaw to drive two doors down the road, which, if me and Goody get on a rickshaw together, that means it's on, like Donkey Kong. So if anyone in Dublin sees us on a rickshaw, you know that me and Andrew are on it responsibly.
So we're going to be kicking things off in Edinburgh on the 3rd of February. Then we're back in London on the 10th of February before Cardiff on the 24th, Dublin on the 9th of March. And then for the very first time, we are heading Belfast on the 10th of March, Manchester on the 15th, then Liverpool on the 16th of March. We've got a very special guest lined up for each one, including Chris Ashton for London, Manchester and Liverpool. So we can find out exactly what happened at Worcester. And he can be horrible to Jim.
Are you booing him there, Jim? You don't want him to come, James?
Well, unless he brings the most sensational stories, which he's promised me he will. He said that he hasn't signed an NDA or anything like that, so he's going to let loose. And I've told him, because it's March, because I'm going to my holiday, and the fact that you've had a booster and lost 10 stone, that we're going to look incredible. So he needs to get on the tanning beds, get the tegs done, ready for what's going to be our biggest tour ever.
And they do tend to get pretty loose because the live shows are not recorded. So make sure you get your mates, your teammates, get them together, get involved for a great night. Tickets are available on eventbrite.co.uk just by searching for the Rugby Pod. And a massive thank you to Guinness, who are supporting us and will be giving everyone a free pint on the night as well. Shall we have a look at the Premiership? Shall we get into the rugby then?
All out ruggers, wasn't it, James?
It was, and I don't know whether you want to start with the game that was the last game, Andrew, because I do feel as if there's a genuine apology coming from myself.
Really, James?
Yeah, yeah.
On that note, there might also be an apology later on from me as well to someone else.
Shall I start?
You go first, James. Go on, you say sorry
first. Oh, there's a real good vibe going on today, guys. Everyone's been nice to each other.
I know, look at us. It's all the creativity down in London. Lee Blackett's interview after the game, bloody loved it. And that made me feel bad for taking the pish on air about Woss, having not even seen the game. Like, I'll just come on air and be like, yeah, Woss, how bad this year? When obviously, in the background, there is so much work going on. Like, we've got such an easy job because we can sit at home, flick on our phones, watch the game superficially, take opinions from the experts on TV, regurgitate what they're saying, and there's no emotion attached to it. Now, I was watching Lee Blackett. We've had him on the show, and I really like him. Really, like, he seems like a really top bloke. Everything you hear is great around him. And I've come on here taking the piss out of Wasps, not even understanding the amount of work. I do understand, I've obviously been in it, but the amount of stress they must be under. And you could see him in the box during the game, and the game was going back and forth all match. Second half, Wasps were class. You could see Leicester potentially winning it at the end. You're like, please, no, especially with the scrums. And Lee Blackett does the interview, and there's a part of me where I was going to ring him up and say, I'm sorry for taking the piss, because seeing how much it meant to him was like so pure, so pure. And for that, I'm sorry. So anyone that listens, when I do take the pish, apart from Quinns and Worcester and England, yeah, when I'm taking the pish, right, it's done on very tongue-in-cheek style. It's done in the Jim Hamilton way. So for that, I'm sorry. But fair play. I know that you'll get into more detail, Andrew, because you were there. But watching Wasps play the way that they did in the second half with a lot of players that I didn't even know who they were, and the quality and the desire against Leicester, who they weren't as good. They've obviously been fairly comfortable this season in terms of results. I know some of them have been close. And you could see one of them performances coming. But fair play to Wasps. And what a game it was, especially in that second half. So Lee Blackett, Wasps, I'm sorry. Melikai Fekitoa, my old selfie. You're not needed. Head to Munster. You're not needed. As you were, at ease.
What? Head to where?
Munster, is he?
Oh, no comment. Don't know.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I interviewed him yesterday, actually, up at the CBS Arena.
Did you get a selfie?
Well, I said, do you want to get a selfie? And he said, well, I'll just do them on my own these days again. So anyway, I did ask him. I said, listen, before we go on, obviously Derek Richardson, the owner, is in the room. Normally, I give a bit of banter about contracts when it's been out in the press. And, you know, I can turn to Derek and say, Derek, just stick another zero on it and I'm sure we'll sign him. Just throw away comments like that. And he looked at me. Now, he's a scary fucking bloke on the field, is Malachi Fekir. Lovely guy. I've looked at him and I said, look, any chance I can give you a bit of banter about the contract scenario? Obviously, it's gone out in the press around what might be happening, what might not be happening. And he's a scary bloke on the field. You see, when his eyes go on the field, you're like, mate, don't run down his channel, because he'll go and belt people and he'll lose his head properly. And he's just looked at me, he's given me the eyes, he's like, Goody, you don't ask me that. I'm like, mate, no problem.
Really?
I'm sorry for even thinking about it. I started apologising to him for even thinking about giving him some banter. So, yeah, no, he's a nice guy. I don't know the scenario. You know, we saw the interview with Lee Blackett pre-match. I think they were chatting about Vi Fifita, who has turned up to us and been really good, but he's on a 1+1 deal. The rumour is he's going to Scarlets. Apparently Scarlets have found a truckload of money for him. You've seen these contracts where people are moving now because, you know, we know the salary cap's been reduced. So, yeah, it's tough. And Malachi Fekitoa, you know, he's a great player. He's been out injured a fair bit this year. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. But listen, it was interesting for me yesterday. Obviously, I work at match day at Leicester as well as I do at Wasps. And people were like, dude, who are you supporting? I'm like, you know, I'm here in a Wasp capacity today. So I just hope it's a good game of rugby. And it wasn't the greatest game of rugby, but the tension at the end, you know, you tweeted about it, Jim, but when you're looking at those scrums at the end, and it was an interesting call. Leicester obviously wanted to get, they could have taken the draw, they could have kicked the penalty and had a couple of minutes left to try and find the win, but they were confident, very confident in their scrum. So they should have been with the front row they had. All international front row in terms of Genge was still on at the end. Nick Dolly came off the bench and Joe Hayes as well. Going up against, without being mean, a Wasps front row that was, you'd probably say, is a third choice front row. Although Dan Frost is a very good player. He had a big impact when he came on, I thought.
He was class.
Read a story about him. During COVID, he was a bouncer at Jack Niles pub in Cornwall, where he was just checking people's COVID status. I'm like, mate, what an uprising. From doing that to being, he's probably Wasps' best hooker, to be fair, at the minute.
He was ice cold.
He was Dan Frost, ice cold. But then you've got B. Allo, who came off the bench as well at tight end, and Zach Nearchuk as well, who looked about 13 years of age.
He is 13, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And my God, you're looking at his face when they're going scrum after scrum. How Wasps got away from that scrum, I've got no idea. People are moaning about it should have been a penalty try the first time. It shouldn't, because actually both front rows come up. You can't give a penalty try when both front rows come up, even if the scrum's still going forward. And then eventually there was a decent scrum from Wasps. Don't know how. Mate, he is blowing out of his ring like you wouldn't believe. Can you imagine? That's your job there. You know you're coming up against a monster pack. Your head's getting squeezed in positions it shouldn't be squeezed into. You can't breathe. Your scrum cap's coming off. It's choking your neck. And somehow you find it within yourself to just hold up a scrum. I mean, fair play to the bloke. And then Alfie Barbary gets the monster turnover as well. So it was back to the wall stuff. Wasps needed that. They needed a bit of luck. I'm going to say one thing about Leicester, and it might be controversial because they've won all the games up until this point. But over the last few weeks, and especially against Wasps at the weekend, the amount they kick the ball is ridiculous. And I know it's the game plan of playing no rugby in their half, but like with 5 minutes to go, you've got Ollie Chessam, who's making a break down the wing. Even he's kicking it as well. So it's so far drilled into them. And I think they've got into a position now where they're thinking, if we just keep playing this way, you know, we might not lose the game. So they're playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win it. And when you get to knockout rugby, you can't have that mentality. So you need a bit more to your game. So I think actually the loss will do, sounds weird, but it will do Leicester a bit of a favour. It might force them to play a bit more further into the half. George Ford is playing well, but he's just kicking the leather off it. I dread to think how many kicks he put in the game in terms of, and this is coming from me, who all I could do not that well was kick. You want to see Leicester playing a bit more. And I think they should have won that comfortably yesterday in terms of how things panned out. Yeah, there's the whole Ellis Genge conversation to have as well with the whole Francois Hougard incident. But, you know, back to the wall for Wasps, credit to him. Lee Blackett, I messaged him. He messaged me back at 1:30 Sunday morning. So he was obviously a few red wines deep as well. I messaged him about his celebration. That's the fastest I've ever seen him run since he broke the Premiership record for the fastest try in a Premiership game when he played at Leeds back in the day. So fair play, mate. He's lost a lot of hair in that job as well, let me tell you.
And what did you make of the Genge Hougard incident, Goody?
Well, it was the supposed hardest bloke on one team going after the best looking bloke on the other. I mean, all you have to do is follow Francois Hogard's Instagram page and know that he is a slick operator in the gym.
I can't work it out though, because he was driving around Cheltenham in a Lamborghini and I was like, mate, you're at Worcester. Now, I don't want to be horrible, because there's obviously footballers
on our familiar year.
Yeah, but there are footballers as well, old Pisporians or whatever, driving around cars like that. But he looks incredible, and he was on the wing, and he played incredible. He's a great rugby player, so I can't work it out, but you're right, he is a good-looking human, that is for sure. And hard, he is quite hard, to be fair, as well.
Yeah, and to be fair to him, he fronted up on the wing. I thought he played exceptionally well. And we'll get to the incident in a second, but we haven't seen a lot of Francois Hougard this season in a Wasps jersey. He's been injured a bit. You know, there's a lot of stuff on social media. He's down in London a fair bit and all this. But actually, he fronted up properly, put it in for the jersey at the weekend. And I think Genge was just frustrated with the fact that he had a massive run-up into a ruck and he saw Hougard with his name on the back, number 14, over the ball. And he's thinking, I'm just going to go and blitz the life out of a winger. The baby rhino's coming. He flew in, and because Hougard is a physical specimen, I'm going to just call him a physical specimen, tell the photo that in the changing room straight after the game when he's got his top off. There's more than 25 abs there, I'm saying. Ridiculous rig. Anyway, Genge couldn't blow him off the ruck. He's got up and he's kind of gone to push him away. There's a finger that's gone towards the eye. He's not deliberately trying to gouge him. He's just trying to push him away. But actually, he then pulls his hair. And one of my rules in life is never fucking touch the lid. You know, since it's been done, you never touch the hair. And actually, I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't know whether he's going to get cited or whatever. Chris Ashton got banned for pulling Alassana Tuilagi's hair. When you look at the world rugby regulations around sanctions, pulling hair is a red card. Low-end ban is 2 weeks. Was he lucky to get away with a yellow card? Potentially. When you look at the incident, do you think yellow card is justified? You could look at the incident and go, yeah, it's a yellow card. But actually, when you go into it and go and look at the, you know, the framework around what World Rugby have put in there for violent play and the tackle area and, you know, high tackles and all this stuff, hair pulling is in there and it is a red card. So be interesting to see what happens.
If you had your skullet that you had before...
Never fucking touched that, Jim.
But that's what I mean. But if he did pull that, I'm telling you now, your head would be detached from your body. But as in the purchase he would have got on that. He was lucky that Hougart's got shorter hair. He lost the plot, didn't he? That's the baby rhino that we've missed. That was the red mist, weren't it, that we've not seen in a while. So I saw something in our last game against Bristol. He was a little bit like that. And look, you don't know how much of the stuff around the media and the Bristol stuff has affected him, but he lost the plot, didn't he? And he's got that in him. And having been one of those players that has seen the red mist one or two times, it's in you. And trying to suppress it is a work on. But, you know, I like Genge. I'm not too sure what will come from it. I don't know how things are viewed. You know, there's bans that are happening, as we've called out on here, Goody, that we're thinking, how the hell is that a ban? And there's stuff that has gone unnoticed. So who knows? And watch this space.
Well, you mentioned Bristol's there. Got the bonus point on Friday night. Are they making a late push, do you think, for the semi-finals?
It's one win, Andy Rowe. Come on. But a much-needed one. And you know what? Goody last week got me thinking. he prodded me thought-provoking tools, whatever they are. I don't know what tools they are inside me that make me think, but he did. And he said that the run to the end of this season, to the top four, the second half of this season, it's easy to say, oh, it's going to be interesting. It's easy to throw away that comment. But in terms of the teams that have got players to come back, in terms of the teams that haven't been in form, the conditions are obviously going to improve later on to the season. Obviously, we're not in that now, and that doesn't matter about the way that Bristol won on Friday against Sale. But he was right. You look at the results at the weekend, and Bristol being one of them, out of all the games, and again, Goody was right, you look at the teams that Bristol have played, your Exeters and your Leicesters, say you look at the three games, this would have been the one for them, wouldn't it, in terms of it's a winnable game. If they can get their physicality right, if they can get into the outside edge, if they can take risks, if Semi can keep hold of the ball and play better than he has in recent weeks because he's the best player, and all them things married up. So that's a huge win for them because of the bonus point as well, and the fact that, probably similar to Wasps in terms of confidence going forward to the rest of the season, you've played against a physical team that, albeit have got their own problems, but have won games this season, they're a good team, well coached, and you're at home, and you talk about desperado. Like, they would have been desperate to win that game. Desperate. Because of where Sale are in the Prem as well. And, well, it doesn't need me to say, does it? It's a huge win for them.
What about Bath?
Hey, they've got 6 points on Sunday. From one day, they got 6 points. They got a four-point victory against Worcester. And then on the same day, Premiership Rugby confirmed they got 2 points for their COVID-affected game against London Irish the week before. So 6 points in one day. I mean, they've only got 10 points in the league, so they've overly doubled their points tally for the season in one day.
What about Alex Hepburn's red card right on the stroke of halftime, Exeter's defeat at Quinns?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I know, like, some people are saying it is an out-and-out red.
Yeah.
If you don't look at the lead-up to the relationship them two are having in the game, Joe Marler and Alec Hepburn, then you might think differently about it because it got a bit heated in that game. I've got to say it because I think it was an unfortunate one. I really do. It's the fact that he lifted the leg, but he's not lifted the leg with any force at all. It was the dynamics of the clip. I don't think he has.
For me, the speed of the flip.
Speed, force, are they the same thing? But I'm saying that Simmons is hitting Marler so hard because you've got to because he's big and he's hard over ball. And Hepburn's come in. And it's just, I'm saying it. I just think it was unfortunate. I think he's not going to go into that breakdown thinking, I'm going to spear him into the ground or I'm going to, rotate him so he hits there. I think it's one of them split second things. It looked like it was almost too easy for him. Do you know what I mean? Like in terms of the mechanics of it, because Simmons has hit him hard, Marler's rolled out and he's got hold of the leg. That is my opinion. I watched it 4 or 5 times. I was like, you know what? What's the point?
He's saying Marler milked it.
Let's just say Marler milked it, yeah.
I do completely agree with Jim around how I don't think he's intentionally thought I'm going to drive his head into the floor here, but there's obviously a bit of bite in it where he really wrenches the leg and, the consequence of doing that is he lands on his head. Now, obviously the dynamics of it with Simmons in the clear out as well, the ref's got no choice though, has he? You've tipped him and he's gone head first into the ground. He's got no choice whatsoever. So then you look at the player and go, did he need to flip his leg up that high? And consequentially, Marler's head goes into the floor. That's the outcome. So then you're judging on the outcome of his action. His action caused head into the ground, which is a red card. So it's a clear-cut red, but it's an unfortunate one because, again, I don't think there's any intent in thinking, right, I'm going to drill his head into the floor here, but the result of his actions has led to that. So the ref hadn't got a choice.
Again, you've summarised that last bit by saying the referee didn't have a choice. Like that was one of them where he didn't have a choice because players, if they've been forced into that position, which he was and landed on his head, it is a red card.
It was another time for Marcus Smith to shine at the end, wasn't it, Goody?
First and foremost, Andre Esthuizen gets man of the match and he is, I think I gave him the good last week, he's just got man of the match after man of the match after 3 on the spin now. Just go in and get a contract extension, son. And say $500,000 on the table for me now or I'm walking. Because he is in the form of his life. But Marcus Smith, and some people are like, I put something out on Twitter going, he's England's 10, give him the keys. He's England's 10 for a long time now because of the way he's playing. And people are like, well, no, they should have ripped him to shreds with the amount of possession they had and against 14 men. The weather conditions were horrific. And he has, and Quinn should have won that game quite comfortably, I thought. Tyrone Green has had an absolute stinker. He's got Danny Kerr, easy pass on his right-hand side. He's under the sticks. They butchered a few chances. Marcus Smith keeps, he's gone for a couple of crossfield kicks. Exeter were clever. Once the red card came for Hepburn, they took a winger off, put a prop on, so there was eight forwards, and then there's a lot of space in the backfield. So Marcus Smith goes probing with the crossfield kicks. Lewis Liner should have scored one. Like, he's chasing after one, and he's not really full out, flat out. He's kind of three-quarter pace, whereas if he just put a bit more in, he'd have caught it on the full and gone in. And then it's literally the last play of the game, isn't it? And he's put another perfect kick in for Esterhazen to get over in the corner. And then in those conditions, tell the Spuds that for that conversion. I've kicked at Arlequins and there's a swirling wind in that stadium. And it, obviously he's going to know more than anyone and better than anyone how the wind plays there. But he's judged it to perfection. Touchline conversion to win the game. Huge Spuds. He's a great player, great talent. And what I did, I don't know whether I liked it or what I did see, is after he slotted the conversion, did you see he screamed at Stuart Ogg? He gave him the big, yeah!
Maybe he shouted teeth. I don't know. Teeth!
Yeah. They're going to be playing against each other. I wonder if Hoggy saw it, but they'll be playing against each other, hopefully, up in Murrayfield in a couple of weeks with the packed house. But we'll get to that later on around whether we're going to see fans in the stadia at the Six Nations.
And Gloucester continue to impress, don't they? A real statement from them winning away at Saracens.
I mean, what sort of mug said they'd finish bottom of the league?
Well, you called me out on Twitter, so people think it's me, Andrew. If they don't listen to the pod, they're thinking, his partner in crime is an absolute idiot, well, he is. But I know, phenomenal. They've never won there, I think I'm right in saying. I mean, prove it if they have. But huge win, two players in the bin throughout the game. Saracens almost fully loaded. Gloucester not expecting to win. They've been great so far this season. If they lost to Sarries and what, you know, second in the table, massive win. And I was chatting to Alistair Hargreaves as well, because he hosts at Saracens. He does my job. He's my apprentice and now he's doing it. And he's like, mate, give me a snapshot on Gloucester. So I reeled off all the good things. And he said, what's their point of difference? And I said, look, I said, I can give a throwaway comment, or what sounds like a throwaway comment, but it actually is. And he said, go on. I said, the driving lineout. I said, I'm telling you now, the driving lineout is ridiculously good. And then they only go and score two tries from the drive, don't they? It's easy to say, oh, they've got a good driving lineout. They've got a phenomenal driving lineout. And when you've got a good driving lineout and you've got that, especially in the conditions, especially playing in the Prem, when you're playing against Saracens as well, where you're going to get opportunity at the lineout because they kick so much, that's what happens. You can win games. I'm not saying that that's the only reason. Their kicking game was spot on and they're confident as well. So that is a massive win for Gloucester. Not the win of the weekend. The Wasp one obviously was, but...
Who are you supporting there, James? Saracens playing against Gloucester.
Why put me on the spot?
Because that's what you do to me, James.
Genuinely, looking at that game, no one, like, as in...
Oh, why being horrible?
Yeah, I'm not sitting on the fence either. Like, I'm watching that game, and for rugby, I wanted Gloucester to win. But it was the same with Wasp Leicester. I wanted Wasp to win that game. Like, I did.
What?
I know, I did. I just... For rugby, because we love it, don't we? So to make it more interesting at the end of the season. But it's more a little bit around the underdog. And because my mate Ravo's arms at Gloucester and Sarries have won a load of stuff and high-profile players, but there's probably a part of me that wanted to see Gloucester win that game. And Billy 12 Trees, we're going to speak to him later on in the show, joins that driving line out. But the game isn't won when they score that line out. The game isn't won. There's still a lot to do and to hold them out. And Lozza had a big kick at the end, probably a similar position to Marcus Smith's. You're thinking, here we go. Like, this is going over and Gloucester are going to struggle to get back. But huge win. Huge win in the context of anyone can beat anyone, and that's what it feels like this season. But on the road at the Stone X, tough place to go and play. You do wonder whether the synthetic pitch that Gloucester are playing on, again, it's only a small thing. It's the inches, you know, as Al Pacino said. But them small inches of being used to playing on that, and going down there to play, the game plan that they've got, decent driving line out, that a few things married up for them. So, because you look at Saracen's tries, they were soft as well. So actually, when you look at that, in terms of how hard Sarries had to work, it was a good day at the office for Gloucester, in all parts to it. So, fair play.
The good and the bad of Jim Hamilton was imprinted on both teams at the Stone X Stadium, James.
Do you want me to hit you with them? Driving line out, good.
Yeah.
Discipline, poor.
No, I was going to say, Gloucester's driving line out, good. That had the stamp of, of everything that you wanted to bring to a game. And then conversely, defending a driving line out, you used to stand upright, didn't you? And I just saw Mauro Itoje go backwards and backwards when he was stood upright. Defending a driving line out, you can't be standing up, can you? You've got to get your head in there.
Yeah, you can. That's how I did my best work.
You've got to bend over and push, mate.
No, it isn't, Andrew. You can't do that. When you've got an L4, L5 disc problem and you're strong as an ox upright. I want to give one shout out, though, because as we are talking about driving line outs, you look at the profile of that Gloucester team, and I've said it here once, let's make a bit of noise about it. Freddie Clark,
yeah, monster
in the second row, who is a back row normally, has filled into that second row position. They've got one of the best lineouts in the Prem. We talk about Esther Hazen at Quinn's getting him £500,000. Pay this man 750 is all I'm saying. Freddie Clark, let's get him 750. Wearing the number 4 or 5, I don't know. He's down as number 4, but I think he was wearing 5. Massive. He's had a massive season. And then you factor in Ludlow as well as captain, who we love, Goody. Fair play. It's been a great season for them.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, speaking of that win for Gloucester at the Stonex Stadium, we can have a chat now with their centre, Billy Twelvetrees. How are you, mate?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Bill, it's been a long time coming. Let's just clear something up for the listeners who can't see this. You've got B12 as your name on Zoom. If we're going by teeth colours, mine should be B4 because that's...
That's getting better, Jim. It used to be B8, then it was B6, so you're getting whiter.
Hey, they're definitely getting whiter, Billy. One of my New Year's resolutions was to invest in the look. But Bill, let's just start with that because we tried to get you on last year, a couple of years ago. Who knows? We've lost track of time. I know the answer to this, or I think I know the answer to it, but let's just get it out of the way. Billy Twelvetrees, is that a real name? Was that a given name or was it a bought name like a number plate?
Definitely wasn't bought. Definitely. It was my mum's original maiden name. So the dad took her name. She was the youngest of three daughters and they didn't want the name to die out. My dad had brothers, so they had a bargaining chip. They took my mum's name, Twelvetrees. And then we had the kids, had one of four boys, and then he started a tree surgery business that ended up being Twelvetrees Tree Surgery. And still going strong. I think it may be 39 years now in West Sussex, and you're still climbing trees at a tender age of 63 with my mum at the bottom of them raking up. So I know, it's brilliant.
That's amazing. That is amazing. I actually thought that was a bit of banter, but the story now. What was your dad's surname?
He's Fentiman, so quite a unique name itself, but the Twelvetrees thing. And like growing up, you didn't know anything about it until the rugby kicked off. And then going to Leicester, and then Geordie Murph cracked on a joke about it, about Twelvetrees and his accent, and then becoming 36 to the Welford Road faithful. And then my dad used to drive up in his battered tree surgery van saying Twelvetrees Tree Surgery. So he used to get a lot of press out of that as well, driving to Welford Road. But still going strong.
Nice. Big question for me, though. Obviously a massive win at the weekend, and we'll get into the nuts and bolts about the win and how well Gloucester are playing. Were you out in London with the boys on Saturday night? Because I've seen a load of stuff on social media. Some of the youngsters absolutely loving life in Mayfair.
No, that's the reason you got me on and not them. Because we've got a bye week in Europe this week as well. So all the boys knew they had a bit of time off this week, a bit of downtime. And so a lot of them booked to stay down in London. I know Haystow and Zam and a few of the other young lads met them down there and enjoyed themselves. But me being one of the senior players in the squad was kids, had the school run this week, so definitely could indulge in that whilst all the others are going away on holiday.
Poor Adam Hastings, there's no way he can deny, reaccuse that someone else is in London with them white tags. Even if it was dark, you could just see these white tags glistening for it's not me, coach. It's not me, coach. It is. But no.
It's because we played on Boxing Day, and the day after, everyone already had a day off, and then he came back on, the 28th, and his tan got even better. His tan got better and his teeth got whiter. And boy, how does that happen, Haysto? We played together on Boxing Day. I think his tan's always on point. And all those young lads, they're incredibly good at looking after themselves nowadays, as opposed to back in the day, him turning up to, OB Wiggs training ground and boys didn't too worry, or turning up at the sheds in Gloucester or the pits it was back then, Jim, as boys didn't really worry. But nowadays, it's the look, it's the way it is, and boys look after themselves well.
It's amazing, Jim. You never even used to clean your teeth, did you? And now these kids are getting their teeth whitened and everything like that. I'm just amazed at the difference.
Andrew, I used to shave my pubs and do an undercut, mate. That was it. That was where as far as I went, and I thought, as Gloucester captain, that was absolutely enough.
I remember turning up at the pits in Hartbury, walking in, and you would walk in, shoulders curled. Bill, how are you? Oh, Jim, how are you? Absolutely fooked. And I'm like, you didn't even play the weekend, bud. Oh, mate, I'm fooked.
Right. Positive. It was exactly. just trying to bring everyone up, and that's why I went on to be captain.
Exactly.
Bill, let's talk a little bit about Ruggers. Now, Andrew's got a confession and an apology. I'm sure he's going to go through that due diligence and process. But my good self, naturally close to Gloucester, still keeping contact with the lads. My best mate, Ravo's arm, is team manager. Obviously, Alex Brown, I can name drop everyone here under the sun. But there's been a lot of changes in Gloucester since you've been there, and it's almost one of them you didn't really know where it's going. And then Skivs comes in, a young coaching team, not as much pressure arguably as there would have been in years gone by, and I'll say it, top four, the lads are flying. What's happened?
I think you answered it. I think even when COVID hit and Johan left, Humphreys left, and a lot of players left, like the predicament of the world that we all lived in was that we didn't know what professional sport was going to be. And I remember a few of our senior players had meetings with Brownie and Lance, and we didn't know where the club was going. But luckily, a few of us knew Skiz and playing with him at Leicester, and Ed Slater knew him, and we said, yeah, definitely, let's get behind him. And I think that pressure did build last year. I think we had a losing streak of maybe 6 or 7 in a row, and with no fans, and you can imagine playing at King's Home or away from home and winning or losing, you suddenly would just walk into the sheds, no atmosphere, lads would just get the bags and go home, and it's just driving home when there's no fans, and it really hurt even more in a way because losing, and it suddenly was just felt so hollow. So the off-season, I think it was great for everyone. We beat London Irish at the end of last year, and then we had a COVID outbreak, and suddenly the season was done. So there was a lot of anger within the team that we couldn't finish the way we wanted to, didn't get into the top flight of Europe. And everyone, I think, went away, had a good break and came back in and were definitely determined to make this work. And Skivs has just stripped it back. You talk about the coaches, him, Kingy, Dom, Tim Taylor, they're a very close group, and the three of them play together. So they get each other really well. And then we do have a senior group of players that understand each other and understand what Skivs wants from the boys. And that's, it's working at the moment, and this league is brutal. If you're not on it, it's cutthroat. So we had that back end of it last year. A few of the teams are going through that now. But just speaking to some of the Sarries boys at the end of the game, even on the weekend, that was the halfway point of the Prem season, and it's January. It's nuts, and we're going all the way to June. So all the players playing definitely don't get carried away, but it just shows how hard it is. But you've got to keep the momentum going as long as you can.
Yeah, certainly. And Jim mentioned something then. I do have to apologise. And I'm just going off the back of what you said. I predicted Gloucester might finish bottom of the table. And I'm sorry, Billy. I'm sorry to you. I'm sorry to the coaches. I've apologised to Kingy over messaging. And it basically was off the back of the end of last season, right? So it was tough at the back end of last season. And what I meant to say was that happened to Gloucester, but it will be Bath that finished bottom. That's what I really meant. So apologies. But Skivs has, you said he stripped it back. Those boys, him, Alex King, Don Waldock, they all played together at Wasps. There is that sort of different mentality from those boys, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And I think when they first came in, they kind of said it truthfully, like, lads, what are we about? What have you been doing? You do this one week, and another week you're chucking the ball around from your own try line for 10 phases, not going anywhere. And, we were very inconsistent, had a lot of good players. So, like I said, Skid stripped it back. He just worked incredibly hard with the forwards for the first year, and Kingy, made us backline, appreciate what we have and who we have. And the strength in the team. Like, you look at our potentially our back three in terms of wingers. You've got Santiago Carreras, who's been playing number 10 for Argentina and is a world-class winger. Yeah. Ollie Thorley, who's a freak of nature and power. And then you've got Zam and Johnny, obviously, internationals already. And you still got Charlie Sharples nursing a shoulder dislocation coming back. So you look at the players we have got and then the pack, what they're doing. We want to get to the ball to those boys and cause damage. But now we are in the depths of winter, it's difficult as well. So we're definitely trying to develop a game that we can impose ourselves in opposition, but also play some good brand of rugby.
And Bill, how is, you've kind of given us a snapshot on the environment, but what's the environment like with the different characters? Obviously, Adam Hastings, Scottish, you know, there's a South African influence naturally with the team as well. Ruan Akhmad at number 8, some old guard as well, Ben Morgan, Charlie Sharples, just to name a couple yourself. But how is that kind of mix? Because Gloucester have always been a team that have had a nucleus of local players that have played at Hartbury, and then you throw into the mix that they've got the checkbook out and it's never really quite worked. But again, just going back to looking at this season with Skivs at the helm, young coaching team and a real mix of players that they've brought in, not the highest profile players when you look at the profile of the league, but just a snapshot of what the culture's like. Well, basically, what the culture's like that I built a few years ago. Is it still going?
Fuck off, Jim. Yeah,
that was brilliant. Honestly, I remember those days that we'd finish team meetings and we'd come into the change room and we're like, come on, lads. I know it's going to be rubbish, but let's get out there and do it. Come on. that's what you said. It was young lads. I was 22 when I turned up at Gloucester. We had Trinder, Johnny, Sharples, all these guys who looked up to Jim, like Grills, Hazy, all those senior Gloucester lads that are still Gloucester legends now. And but what amazed me then was the different culture than Leicester. But then game day, it was at King's Home in front of the shed. It was just flick of the switch and you'd do it. So that sort of mentality has definitely changed because of professionalism. Probably got more. We've changed. We've left Hartbury now. Martin St. Quinton's built his own facility at King's Home. We've got a new pitch there and they're developing the site next door. So it's definitely a culture of what Skivs and the management are building. But the players know that the heart of what makes Gloucester great is King's Home, the shed, and a bit of old school nature of like the town, Gloucester, just get on with it, get head down, work extremely hard and the results will come.
Mate, I can't believe you just said people used to look up to Jim. Surely it was only because he was about 6'6", not because he was an actual leader, because he moans like every time I phone him or he phones me, the first thing he says is how fucked. That's all he ever gets.
Who I messaged him the other week is this, what's wrong? What's wrong? I'm fucked. And I was asking him to, luckily the club gave me a testimonial this year and I asked him, like, Jim, Raybo is keen as mustard to play in the second row of my game. Can you play next to him? And he said, no way. And then it was slowly ticking through his brain. He's like, yeah, I'm in. So he's committed himself to me, which I'm still hoping he does. My testimony is, because of COVID, it's been a bit difficult, but hopefully we'll get a game sport at the end of the year.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the testimonial, Bill, while we've got you, because this is one of the old romances in rugby. I don't even know if they do it in other sports and football, that still lives. And guys who've given their, obviously, career to the game. Is it 10 years at a club? Like, what's the script? Or is it 10 years in rugby? Like, how does it work? And what's going to happen now, migrating through COVID with yours and your captain heading back down to front up the cherry and whites?
Amazing. I mean, that's why the boys are desperate to have you get back in the shed. That was the hardest thing, doing the lap before the game. I think it's what all skippers or captains of the club try and do when they first take over. So can we stop doing the lap of the shed? But then once you do it once and once you do it twice, the allure of the shed gets to you and you want to do it more and more. I don't know the rules with the testimony in terms of the 10 years, but when it first I was asked and, you know, awarded it, I was a bit taken aback because of people like Hazy, Bucko at the club, even Charlie Sharples, Henry Trinder, who are, in my mind, you know, Gloucester boys through and through. So to be awarded it was massive. And then COVID hits and then it put a spanner in the works. We didn't think it was going to happen. But, you know, I've got a committee together and this year we've been, we're planning some things, hopefully. And then Omicron hit around Christmas. We've had to postpone a few things. But, you know, I want to support some local charities and a bigger charity. And Winston's Wish, that is very close to me and my family's heart, and raise as much money for them as we can and the awareness around Gloucester. And just, I want to have a fun year. Like the couple of years that have been going on, not just in rugby, but in life, it's been pretty down and dreary. So the whole point of the game, I spoke to Brownie, because when my first year, he had a testimonial and he admittedly said he didn't enjoy it as much because it came a bit of a stress. He's like, let's, with the bye weeks this year, let's organise a game on a bye weekend, get all the players you played with, past and present, who wants to, like yourself, Jim, and you know, play at King's Home against a team that you want to play against. So, you know, we organised a game against the British and Irish Classic Lions for middle of Feb, but we're hopefully going to push it back to September next year because of COVID, so we get some, you know, good awareness going. So the year will be what it is, but I just want everyone to enjoy themselves, raise as much awareness and money and cash for Winston's Wish and the Pied Piper Appeal, which is local to Gloucester, and have some fun.
Well, Bill, my first line as captain will be, lads, I know we're fucked. I know we're fucked, but... And there'll be a but, and then I'll charge them up again.
There we go. We'll go. I'm just looking forward to seeing you in Raver. I've heard lots of things about it, but, you know, want to see the evidence.
People will pay great money to see Jim Hamilton put his high-tech, high-cut boots on again with about, 25 mil studs in there and just get filled in everywhere. Give penalties away all over the shop and just get filled in by boys.
I was going to say, we need a 10. How's that ankle holding up? I heard you had...
Mate, struggling. Struggling, mate. I've got pins and plates.
What do you mean? It's fused. It's never been stronger.
By September, they might be out. But if you've got a triple XL shirt, I'll waddle onto the field for about 10 minutes.
Do you know what? We played Quins the other week and I asked Adam Jones I told him in the Lions. I said, Bob, are you going to play with me? And he's like... You haven't got a shirt big enough for me. And I said, that's the one thing. I got organised straight away. I did you to run out, take the first scrum, then you can wave the crowd goodbye and run off the pitch if you want. So I've got you sorted, Goody.
Nice. I'll do that then for you, mate. No problem.
All right, Billy. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, mate. Best of luck for the rest of the season with Gloucester and, of course, your testimonial, mate.
Cheers, Andy. Cheers, Goody. Cheers, Jim. Have a good day, boys.
Cheers, Billy.
Class, Bill. Well done this season, mate. Thanks.
Top lad. He is, isn't he? And you can see he's been at Gloucester for a long time, seen some highs, seen some lows, and... Yeah, he's a big part, and it's a tough place to get into the centre at the minute, obviously, with Atkinson and Chris Harris playing exceptionally well as well. But every time he slips on that jersey, he's doing exceptional things for Gloucester this year.
Let's have a quick look at the URC now then, because, Jim, both the Scottish sides had wins at home against Welsh opposition, didn't they?
Quote, unquote, I said phenomenal about these two teams pre-New Year in the media. I reckon I said phenomenal maybe 5 times. It was quite embarrassing, really. I was a bit nervous doing mainstream media. Bit out of sorts. And then Tom Shanklin came at me and was like, what are you talking about? Phenomenal. I was like, we actually look at the two Scottish teams at the minute. Edinburgh now top of the URC. Scotland, you know, smashing England. Probably going to win the Six Nations. Glasgow beating Exeter at home. Saracens getting beat at home against Edinburgh. It is phenomenal. Like, it genuinely is. And the way that they're playing, bonus point against Cardiff before half time at the weekend. No fans. Now, I don't want to belittle the Welsh regions. Fortunately, now for Scotland, we're better than that. You know, we are waiting in situ. I say we as a Scotsman. These teams now, Edinburgh and Glasgow, Glasgow getting a good win against the Ospreys as well. And that was probably a more challenging game in terms of the two performances. Are waiting for the big ones, the Ulsters, the Munsters, the Leinsters now, to really see where they're at. But Edinburgh, top of the URC, the sad thing about it, no fans. You look at the English Prem, I don't want to get political or get called out as soon as I say anything on there. It's a real shame that Scottish fans, Edinburgh and Glasgow fans, are not getting to enjoy this. They've felt a lot of pain in recent years. I know Glasgow have been good, Edinburgh not so much in terms of longevity of results, that they're not getting to witness these kinds of performances week in, week out. I know it's only short term, but that's the one sad thing. But as we lead into the Six Nations, you can't look too much at the URC because it's so bitty at the minute. It's so, who knows, up in the air. But in terms of going forward to the Six Nations and Scotland, you laugh at me. We are phenomenal this year.
Is that we as in Wales? Because one of your things was to be nice to Wales, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, Wales will be all right, I'm sure. But the regions aren't great, Goody. For whatever reason, and look, you know, it's not something that I'm hugely bothered about. I don't need to be that bothered about. But that's the sad thing and the worrying thing. And I get it wrong every single year. But something's not right in Wales. Like, it's really not. However you look at it, in terms of the model, but the focus on the regions, you know, Liam Williams is off to Cardiff. Well, he ain't played the Scarlets. Like, I mean, how's that happening? Again, not that I know too much about it, but I'm looking at it and then I'm looking at the performances. I don't really get it. But on a Scotland's point of view, you can't be happier for the team, especially Edinburgh. Fantastic rugby city, and now they're playing some great stuff. So Cock has put in the foundations. Whether or not he left with the happiness and love of the squad. Well, we know that isn't the case.
What are you saying?
Well, I'm just saying that they weren't happy being shouted at. Whereas when I was a young lad, I didn't mind getting shouted at because I'd go 2 foot into a breakdown and sort it out that way. But you can't do that now. But what he's instilled and then what Mike Blair's brought into that team, and you look at the young Scottish lads that are performing as well, it's class, and it's class for Scotland as well.
Well, we'll have a look at the European club game in a minute, but you mentioned just before about Six Nations. I know, Jim, you think Scotland are going to be runaway winners this year. There's been a bit of chat about it all being held in one country so you can have crowds. Are you guys across that at all?
Not just one country, England.
Yeah. Well, England's the only place without restrictions in terms of fans and stadium at the minute, isn't it? So, yeah, for me, you look at, listen, let the French do what the French want to do because they're, you know, they're a different beast. But we are, you know, part of the United Kingdom. So you sit there and you go, if you're Scotland and if you're Nicola Sturgeon and she's, you know, whether you make this political or not, it is a political decision at the minute because Boris has made one choice in England. The Welsh guy's made another choice in Wales and Nicola Sturgeon up in Scotland has made her choice around banning fans from stadia. And you can find your rights and wrongs in it all. So they're the decisions that those people have taken. So if you're the SRU, if you're the WRU, it makes complete sense to me financially, the spirit of the game. And, you know, you hear what the players say. I think some of the Welsh boys, Dan Bigger and Lewis Rees-Zammit, have both come out and said,
yeah,
what's the point of playing in an empty stadium? So if you're the WRU or the SRU and you're saying, right, the government have said we can't have fans, and as it stands at the minute, that is the case. It may change in future, but what they should be doing, personally, I think, is looking at a contingency plan for Scotland to play their games. Speak to Newcastle Football Club, speak to Sunderland Football Club, where it's just over the border and you've got a 30, 40, 50, 60,000 seat stadium to go and play in.
They played at St James's Park during the World Cup and we all know how good that was. I know it was a World Cup and it is very different, but yeah, it is. It's 2 hours down the road.
And don't get me wrong, logistically, there's a lot to get through. I haven't even looked at Newcastle United fixtures to see whether actually they could do that, but Sunderland's an option. If you're Wales, play it at Bristol City, Ashton Gate, there's 30-odd thousand in there, straight over the bridge. You know, we had all the Scots and the Welsh come in for New Year's Eve, didn't we, into England? And you saw all the stuff in the press around that. So, you know, if you're Wales, even play at Twickenham. Play your games at Twickenham. You know, it's a rugby stadium. And, okay, logistically, there's going to be fees to pay and all stuff like that. But I'm sure you'd still sell it out. Unless, of course, the WRU and the SRU are bound by the Scottish government and the Welsh government saying, well, if you do that, we ain't giving you any money for something else. And I don't know the ins and outs of it. I don't know whether those governments hold something over the unions where they can control what they do. But if I'm anyone in the WRU or the SRU, I'm thinking contingency plan, let's get it in, you know, let's speak to as many stadia as possible to see if we can play a game and have fans and have atmosphere. Because, you know, the players don't want to play behind closed doors again. And it makes no sense whatsoever that, say, Newcastle United can play football. And what's Newcastle to the border?
Hour and a half. Depends if you're in the B, the M and the W. Well, on the train, it's, yeah, the train's a couple of hours. It's not that far, really, in the grand scheme of things. And that's what you said, like, on that, it's, again, we're trying to work out and the logistically how you do it. And some people would be saying, oh, there's a global pandemic. People have got their own opinions on it. And sometimes it's difficult to put it out there and pass opinion. You know, I said move the Glasgow Edinburgh game to Newcastle. Easier said than done, a bit tongue in cheek. Rugby, I don't think the Six Nations, well, they will survive, they'll find a way. But imagine another Six Nations with no fans. How difficult it was commercially. Not that money's everything, it's absolutely not. But I'm going based, being in Scotland, what I'm seeing in England, I'm going based on Edinburgh and Glasgow. I know it didn't happen, was going to be with no fans. And I'm watching Quinns and Northampton at Twickenham. There's got to be a solution here where we evolve and we move with the times. What I can't see, and again, I might be completely wrong, I don't look at it as much now on the news or follow politics. On January the 17th, they're making a decision in Scotland about what's next, the roadmap out. I can't see them going from absolutely no one in stadiums to, I tell you what, in 2 or 3 weeks' time, let's bang 70,000 back into BT Murrayfield. Can't see it happening. So there needs to be a contingency. I don't know how that looks financially, but you can't have this England filling up Twickenham and making the money which they'll make out of that, and then Scotland playing England at Murrayfield with no fans, and then England are playing Ireland at Twickenham and it sold out. Like, just doesn't make any sense. Something needs to happen. It can't be a case of, right, there's no fans, carry on as is. Just ain't going to work. I just don't think the product will be the same. I just don't think people are going to stand for it.
Especially in a place that's landlocked. So obviously, there's a border between Scotland and England, you know, and obviously England and Wales, but it ain't a border where it's a hard border, is it? It's a lot. You can just drive through it and walk through it, whatever you want. We're not talking about, you know, obviously the Ireland one is different because it's an actual individual island itself, and you know they're part of the EU as opposed to, you know, being part of Brexit and all that stuff. I don't want to get into that politically, but people are going to say it's a bit like the flu now. You've got to live with it, and that's the sort of messaging that's come out in England. Nicola Sturgeon supposedly is making decisions and doing it. She's going to push for Scottish independence. That's what her party's about. So there is a political play here around what they're doing, and whether you agree with it or you don't agree with it, if you're a fan and you want to see games and you want to be in stadiums, you know, the WRU and the SRU and the IRU, Ireland Union, should, you know, be leaving no stone unturned to try and facilitate that, hopefully.
What about the club game? Because Europe is definitely on for the next few weekends, but are we going to see more postponements? A game's going to be replayed? What's happening? Is anything clearer?
Oh, and let me have a look at these hairy, not hairy balls. I don't know. Who knows? No one knows.
You may well see postponements, yeah.
Yeah, I think we will see postponements. So if you're asking me to look through the Manscaped polished with that dodgy rag that's been reused a few times as a face cloth as well, then I'm seeing postponements. I really am. I'm seeing points gifted. Oh, gosh.
We don't know.
It's bringing me down. I'll be honest. This chat is bringing me down, but it has to be had. I'm just looking week by week. I'm going day by day and hoping that something else happens. But what it does show you, and again, without segueing too much, is around how congested the season is. It's too much, isn't it? Like, really, when you look at it, we're talking about Prem games that have been canned, and yes, the points are given across. URC games that have been postponed. Where they're going to play the games, no one knows. They're probably not. European games, now we're talking about, that have been postponed. When they're going to be replayed, no one knows. Who's getting the point, no one knows. We're talking about the most premier club competition in the world, and we ain't got a Scooby-Doo what's going on. So there's my answer. I don't know.
Yeah, that's my big point on it. We're going into rounds 3 and 4 of the Champions Cup, which is the end of the pools, effectively. They haven't made a decision yet on the round 2 matches where the French teams couldn't play because their government put in travel restrictions. So, yeah, for me, I think you should have had some strong leadership from EPCR and said, well, you know, we've seen what they do with the issues around COVID. So if a team has COVID, they don't apportion blame to it, but they give the other team 5 points and a 28-0 victory. So we're not blaming you, but we are blaming you. So it's 28-0 to the opposition. The French teams couldn't fulfil those fixtures because of a decision made, not at club level, but at their government level. So they should just lose the fixtures, in my opinion. 5 points to nil to the opposition. And so at least everyone knows, going into rounds 3 and 4, the parameters around what they've got to achieve to get to the knockout stages. Now, there ain't any space. You can't play rearranged European Champions Cup games in the middle of the Six Nations. You just can't do it because there's obviously league games going on, there's squads that are in bubbles and all that stuff. So someone just needs to get their spuds out, make a decision. There'll be uproar because the French won't like it, but, you know, it's their government that made the decision. So there ain't space in the diary to rejig these games and put them in anywhere. And then you're asking a league to maybe move some other fixtures to play midweek somewhere. It just makes a mockery of it. So as there's, you know, this points gifting position in place anyway for COVID-related games, that's what everyone signed up to. And that's, unfortunately, I think, what we're going to have to live by. You know, someone just be a leader. There's no leaders out there. There's no one wants to make a decision because they ain't got the space.
I'll be a leader.
They ain't got Jim's hairy bollocks, have they?
I would be a leader now because problem maker, problem solver. Now, when I was at Leicester, Call of Duty was the game to play, and we used to play against different teams. Now, we were in the jungle online, headsets on, and I'm a sniper, and someone is somersaulting off the cliffs and then shooting me in the head. And I was like, these were phenomenal. Maybe that is the way forward. Maybe if it ain't going to be played, there needs to be like a Call of Duty or something like that, or a FIFA tournament. There needs to be something, eh? Something upbeat, something positive. I'm going for Call of Duty.
What about a boat race? Get your best 10 drinkers to do a pint each. See who wins.
Yeah, you can On Zoom, though, you can cheat, can't you? Throw over your shoulder a little bit.
Mate, I'd get picked for that team, whoever that team is, I'd get picked for, and you would, Jim. You wouldn't be on the bench anymore, would you?
No, that'd be leading. I'd probably be captain. I'd probably be the Lions.
All right, well, before we completely lose our way, Goody, do you want to lead us through the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Yeah, a few bits of good this week. We're going to start off in France with Perpignan. It was a big battle of the basement. They beat Biarritz away from home to move themselves out of the relegation zone. So big tip of the slipper to Perpignan. We mentioned it earlier, Munster beating Ulster with only 14 men for 65 minutes. Tadhg Burn being the skipper and the leader. He had a massive performance. So well done to Munster. Jim, we're going to come up to hashtag always Scotland. Is it hashtag always Scotland?
Well, it's the same thing. It's Edinburgh, but same thing.
We'll mention Glasgow as well, their victory over the Ospreys, but mainly about hashtag always Edinburgh. Top of the combined URC table. Don't know what that means, but they're top. They are top of the table after 8 games for the first time in 12 years after their 34-10 victory over Cardiff. So, Jim, Scottish rugby, Edinburgh, Glasgow, phenomenal.
Thank you.
Phenomenal, all of you. Especially you, James. Phenomenal. What else was good? Andre Esterhazy, mentioned him earlier. Third man of the match performance on the spin for Harlequins. Offer him a pay rise, whatever you do. He scored the winner versus Exeter. Obviously, Marcus Smith's conversion and his crossfield kick were paramount in that as well. So, massive tip of the slipper to those two. The Saints spanking Newcastle Falcons 44-8 away from home. Big victory, big performance. Some of those young boys, especially Fraser Dingwall. He tackles like a dingwall. He just goes around smashing walls for fun. So, hell of an effort from him. What else is good? Well, there's only two places to go now, James, I think. And it's close. It was very close between the two.
Bath?
No, not Bath. Well, Bath won. Let's throw them in there. They won a game. They got 6 points in a day. Orlando Bailey with the spuds to knock the penalty over towards the death. So well done to him. But Gloucester, get a mention of the good. Of course they do. Massive statement win at Saracens. Then they had the night out in London. I'm just loving the social media clips of Lewis Rees-Sammet and all the boys. Adam Hastings' teeth all over the shop. Whiter than you've ever seen in your life. Gloucester doing exceptionally well at the minute. Massive win over Saracens. I say massive win, it was a point, but in terms of getting a victory down there, it's huge for them. So well done to them. But the goo, James Hamilton, can only go to one place.
Wasps.
There we go, Jim. I'm glad you said it. They stopped Leicester Tigers' unbeaten start to the season. Alfie Barbary was phenomenal. 18 carries, 5 defenders beaten, and that crucial turnover when Tigers were looking at taking the win towards the end. Lee Blackett's celebrations, his interviews, the whole thing. Wasps needed the victory. First team to beat Leicester Tigers this season. So Wasps get the good this week. The bad, a few bits of bad. We just mentioned it actually. Six Nations potentially partially being played behind closed doors, especially in Wales and Scotland. Let's hope they come to their senses and that changes. What else is bad? EPCR, still no decision. We've just spoken about it around the postponed games going into rounds 3 and 4. Someone needs to be a leader. Jim says call of duty. But EPCR, they get a mention of the bad this week for lack of leadership, I'm going to say, Jim.
Hero. I mean, I'm happy to call them out.
Yeah, there we go. What else is bad? Breve, one of my old clubs. They lost to Bordeaux at the weekend.
Didn't see it. Was it bad?
Well, they lost at home and they only just lost, but they've now moved into the bottom two. They've lost 8 of their last 9 games, so they're on a pretty bad run at the minute. They've slipped into the bottom two in the top 14, so they have to get a mention of the bad. Where are we going? Sale. We didn't really speak about them too much this week. Their discipline was absolutely horrific. Alex Sanderson was raging after the game. Bevan Rodd gave 4 penalties away. It wasn't great, was it? Their discipline is shocking. And he said, while I might seem pretty calm, I'm absolutely boiling inside, so I'd hate to be a Sale player today. He was talking about changing ways to make players change their ways. So there's some punishments coming for the Sale boys, isn't there, Jim?
There is. Discipline's been their Achilles heel. I don't know what. Look, you're asking the wrong man about how you change your ways.
Yeah, so they get mentioned the bad this week. But the bad, unfortunately, has to go to another old club of mine. And it's Newcastle Falcons. They got spanked 44-8 at home to Saints at the weekend. Defensively, they've been all over the shop for the last couple of weeks. I mentioned it before. They conceded 31 points last week to Leicester and 43 to London Irish the week before. So unfortunately, Newcastle Falcons, you get the bad this week. The ugly, a couple of bits of ugly. Red cards for Simon Zebo and Rory Sutherland. High shots, weren't too ugly. But unfortunately, the ugly this week has to go to Alec Hepburn. Although it was Joe Marlowe, he did lift him up and drop him on his head. Whether it was intentional or not, I don't know. But that's all I could find from the ugly this week. So Alec Hepburn, you're getting the ugly.
Thanks, Goody. And you've got a shout out to finish off with, don't you?
Yeah, a massive shout out to everyone at Birstall RFC and the family and friends of their former coach, Paul Woodpig Smith, who sadly passed away last month. He helped so many people during his time at the club, and everyone there has been raising a glass to him over the past few weeks. and we'll send in all our love and best wishes to his friends and family as well.
No, absolutely, Goody. Error.
Thanks, Goody. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, producer Tristan, and thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, check out Eventbrite to get tickets to our Six Nations live tour, and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
Rugby Spot.
Spotter pod.